to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, Katie Godden, and the team at The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. This week, we're talking to someone who's had a long internal learning career and has recently taken the move to go it alone. I'm delighted to welcome Andrew Beavers to the podcast. Thank you for joining us, Andrew. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit more about your background and the journey you've taken so far?
Yeah, thanks, Katie. Thanks for first of all, thanks for the invite, and thanks for having me on a podcast. Looking forward to it. So, bit of a lengthy career, but in summary, I probably spent around about 20 years or so in corporate L&D, and I suppose the thing that made me look at setting up myself was I always made a conscious effort to work across multiple industries. Didn't take the traditional route into learning development through sort of secondary education or higher education. At an early age, I went out to work to earn some money, sort of got the book for that, carried on through, and then in my sort of early 20s found that now was the time for me to do some education. It just wasn't for me sort of in my teenage years. So I did an MVQ through the company I was working with at the time, really supportive, and went from there, really. As I say, 20 years in corporate L&D, working in multiple industries, from pharmaceuticals to food manufacture to luxury and furniture retail, charity, higher education, medical supplies, wealth management and finance, and healthcare. So I'm completely different and opposite ends of every spectrum you could probably get. But I knew learning development was a career for me. I think, like many L&D professionals that I speak to, I went along to an event one day, facilitated event, and unfortunately it was not a great event, but it turned out great for me because it was a sort of a light bulb moment for me to actually say, do you know what, I've got passion for this, I've got passion for speaking to people and listening to what people are, to finding solutions to their problems, whether it's questions or practical solutions to their problems. And I just thought, you know, it turned something on in me to say, you know, there's something there, whether it's spending time with people, educating people, taking a complex message and breaking it down into a really easy to understand way. What turned out not to be a fantastic facilitated away day for me has turned into a career of 20 years. So really, you know, really grateful for that, and try and look for the opportunities in these things. And regards to sort of going on my own and setting up Mosaic Professional Development, well, it kind of come from a bit of a sort of an adverse opportunity, really. So having worked up across all them careers for about 20 years, I landed what I thought was the dream role with the Forever company, if that still exists. And a couple of months into starting that role, was told through a senior restructure that had actually been made redundant, which was really difficult to sort of to get my head around, really, having gone through multiple layers of a process. But it was the first lockdown, just to put some sort of framing around it. It was the first lockdown. It was the end of a year, sort of October, November time. No one was hiring. So I really started practicing what I talk about in my leadership and people manager, frontline manager sessions: control the controllables, and don't worry what you can't do. So it kind of come from there. I had lots of skills that I built up over the years. I had lots of content that I built from over the years. I had great support around me and a really, really good network, but with no money and no website, no sort of direct clients, I thought, why not? I suddenly found this confidence from somewhere to reach out to, you know, a couple of people, and a couple of people turned into a couple more people, and you know, that's how business goes. So really enjoying it. That was a really highlighted summary of my career to date. But yeah, hopefully that's, you know, relatable to quite a few people out there.
It sounds like you've definitely had a varied career then. Like, obviously, it sounds like you were not necessarily forced into setting up your own company, but kind of that was the circumstances, and that's the way that you've gone. Were you thinking about doing that before you were made redundant or anything? or was it just that was a situation you were in and that was the best route to go down?
No, great question. I think being completely honest, I've always sort of, I use the word daydream, I've always sort of daydreamed about having my own organisation. I say work with some market leaders in their field, you know, throughout the UK, you know, into Europe, around the world, and also some sort of family-run businesses as well. And I've always had this sort of daydream about, you know, if this was my organisation or whatever. So yeah, I've kind of always had that in me. I suppose the sort of the bit that I've been a bit disappointed with myself is just not having the confidence to do it up until this point. So the situation really helped me, because as much as I was interviewing and getting quite far in corporate role sort of interview stages, it just didn't quite work out. There was a couple of thirds and a couple of seconds and, you know, close twos, silver medals, I suppose you'd say, in corporate roles. But actually, you know, I sort of found a confidence from somewhere. I think it definitely helps having a fantastic support network around you. My wife particularly is, you know, is exceptionally supportive. But yeah, the sort of situation lends itself to, well, this is the only option at the moment. So it was kind of, you know, all chips in and go with it. But yeah, I've always sort of daydreamed about it. You're absolutely right to bring that up. And yeah, it's just them sort of decisions you make in your head over the years while you're thinking about that sort of stuff are a reality now for, you know, for myself and for Mosaic.
Definitely. So I think setting up a business in any sort of climate is probably a difficult thing. And like you said, like I think it's a bit of the unknown. Like when you're working in a corporate company, you kind of go in, do your job and you go home. But I think when you set up your own business, that's when you really start to learn like the nitty gritty bits and the bits that you didn't necessarily know about. Yeah. What sort of challenges did you face? Like you set up your business in the second lockdown, or was it the first year of lockdown? So that would have been a really difficult climate to actually set up a business in. What were your challenges? Because I'm sure you had a lot more or different challenges, to say the least, compared to other people that set up businesses either prior to it or kind of now.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, couple of sort of layers to this. I think the first one being is, this is absolute passion of mine. You know, educating people from, you know, from a young age all the way through to, you know, senior, you know, business owners, business leaders, senior leadership teams, senior management teams. This is absolutely passionate for me. So I suppose all the challenges, you know, when it comes to it, if it wasn't a passion of mine, you could probably call them challenges. But I sort of calibrated my mind a little bit differently to that and looked at them as opportunities. I mean, you know, yes, it was difficult setting up a business with, you know, with no clients, reaching out a lot of the time cold, but I've made a lot of, you know, positive connections over 20 years. And just, you know, talking to people, reconnecting with people, sort of really helped, from, you know, some immediate orders through to, you know, endorsements, for example, on LinkedIn or, you know, in other areas where someone can say, well, I'm not in a position to make a decision with that, but I can definitely help you with that. So, I think the biggest thing is when you're passionate about something, and when people see that passion and believe in that, whether it's a, you know, a one-off training course that I've delivered for someone over the years, or whether it's, you know, programs where, you know, people have had, you know, serious light bulb moments and it's really changed their way of thinking. I think that's the first layer is don't underestimate, you know, people having the ability to see when you are completely, you know, passionate about something. But I say after that, it was more about calibrating my mind about looking at the opportunity. So, you know, for example, in lockdown, one of the things that was really thriving was online training. You know, people had time on their hands they didn't have before. And I think employers were slow to react in a lot of places and was looking to fill time on people, and training being one of them. So I think looking at a potential product or service or solution there, that sort of really helped. And when you are, you know, setting up yourself, you can move really quickly. You know, there's still processes you go through. You know, is this right? You know, is this correct? Am I doing this for the right reasons, etc.? But you can make all the decisions quite quickly. There's not a lot of tape that you have to go through if you think that that's a valid product or a valid service that you're offering. So again, it was very much mindset. I think definitely in a lockdown, it allowed me to connect with a wider audience because a lot of people were moving to online, or they had an understanding before about, you know, things not having to be face to face. Although I will put in there really isn't any substitute for sort of face to face facilitation or for delivery of messages. But people were more open to exploring IT. The barriers were down a little bit, so that definitely helped in meeting people, definitely from a wider audience, you know, all across the UK, from around Europe and around the world. And I think just about, you know, I'm an ideas person as well. I'm quite a creative character as well. So actually just looking at solutions that people was having. So one of the things that, you know, one of the products that we've still got today is something called Later Learning. And it's a really short little Eventbrite, 30 minutes, but it's actually done 8:30 till 9 o'clock in the evening, because we highlighted, or I highlighted, there was a need for quality learning, training and development at that time, people on shift work or busy working parents. So again, I think with anything, I think, you know, I'm not the most natural of salespeople, but I think the best salespeople are solution finders. So it's just about genuinely connecting, being authentic, genuinely connecting with your customer base, listening to what's giving them a headache and actually coming up and saying, well, do you know what, we can do this for you, or this could, you know, this could be done. Or even if you can't personally do something for someone, actually just helping people with some subject matter expertise that you've picked up along the way. I think that's all really important to me, and something that, you know, as I grow Mosaic and scale Mosaic up, that I want to, you know, I want to filter through the organization.
You've made some really good points there, and you've kind of said a little bit about what Mosaic does, but do you want to expand a little bit more and tell us about what Mosaic does, and I guess how it's evolved from those lockdown stages to where it is now?
Yeah, of course. Thanks for the opportunity. I mean, I've just said I'm an ideas person. I suppose sometimes that can be a great thing, but sometimes it can be quite an exhausting thing as well. And I suppose sort of the, I don't like necessarily like the word entrepreneur, but the entrepreneurial spirit is definitely there in me. And sometimes I can't keep up with myself. that's how it works. But yeah, Mosaic, I mean, really simply, it's broken into sort of these two parts of the organization. There's the learning, training and development side of the business. And just to summarize that for you, I've got 50 plus award-winning training titles, with roughly about 2 days worth of real high quality content in my sort of skeleton decks, or skeleton archive for each of those titles. So if an organization reaches out and says, you know, we want to have a half day session on this, or a full day, or a 2 day deep dive into something, or even we've got a 45 minute to 60 minute, can we have a power hour with you talking about X subject? Then we'll share our skeleton decks with our potential clients. We'll say what's going to add real value, what tools, techniques, structures and models really sort of align with your, you know, your business culture and values, and what do you want to understand at the end of that time. And it's all driven by the customer, by the client, as I think it should be. On top of that side, we've got 5 products that we are exclusive on Eventbrite. Some of them really low cost, some of them actually free of charge, because it was really important for us. One of our values is accessibility, that people can access high quality training, even if you've not, you know, got a budget, or you've got a small budget, or there's simply one person in your HR team and it's a joint role with L&D, or if it's a, you know, if it's an L&D role, and it's the first time you've ever been in an L&D role, we completely understand that. That is overwhelming sometimes, and it's where do you get your support from as an L&D professional? So we like to offer that out, and we do 30 minute bursts of learning, which are sort of high intensity products around the fundamentals of a product. We've got some of them coming up online. We also do something called a one slide series, where we focus on just one slide, one tool, one technique, one model or structure, and we sort of deconstruct it and put it back together in the 30 minutes as well. So these bite-sized sessions are quite popular, and are mirroring all the data we're collecting about people's information retention and people's attention online. They're really low cost. They happen quite regular as well. So it's about offering value. And of course, like I said before, we've got that Later Learning series, that sort of 8:30 till 9 o'clock series, where you can log in at a later time if that's your, you know, your peak time where you take information on, or if you're a busy working parent or a shift worker. We don't see any reason why you shouldn't have access to quality learning development just because you fall outside the 9 till 5. And then we've got a couple of free products. So we have something called a Training Unplugged conversation once a month, where we've got a resident HR specialist. And this is completely unscripted. Just tap into us. You know, if it's ideal for smaller businesses, if you want free HR and learning development advice, completely objective. We can get to meet us, get to see our style, If we'd like, you know, to discuss bringing us into the organisation at a later time, that'd be fantastic. But this is about offering, you know, offering expertise. That's what we're there for at the end of the day. And we have a completely unscripted, up to an hour, you can stay for 5 minutes or the full 60 minutes. And that's called Training Unplugged. And then every now and again, a bit more, you know, infrequent, we have something called Mosaic and Friends, where we use people from around our network who want to, you know, share stories and link into some of the subjects that we, you know, we're either facilitating conversations about hot topics, or from, you know, just something around our network. We're noticing a bit of a trend in. So some great stuff there. And then the second arm, really quickly and really easy to understand, is the professional services side. So yeah, from supporting fellow, you know, learning development professionals to being a guest speaker or guest facilitator on a higher education program. We are qualified executive coaches, so we offer one-to-one coaching and group coaching or action learning sets. We offer outplacements to support for people being made redundant. Having personally been through that, and obviously with our L&D hat on, we're in a good position to sort of support people through, from writing CVs to preparing for interviews, etc. So yeah, two main arms. We've got the sort of the training development side, and we've got the professional services side.
That's really good. And I think it's really interesting that you've used your own experiences to actually kind of enhance the services and products that you're actually offering out to people. You kind of mentioned about trends and stuff. So given you set up in lockdown and things, I guess, were done pretty much online, what sort of trends are you seeing with your clients now? Are people going back to face-to-face more, or is there more of a kind of mixed approach of kind of online, face-to-face, etc.?
It's a great question, and I think this is a bit of a moving, beast, this one, Katie. But I mean, just from our own experiences, you know, there are some fantastic, you know, e-learning platforms out there, social platforms out there, and they're evolving all the time. But over 50% of our requests are for face-to-face facilitation, whether it's sort of shorter sessions, couple of hours, up to half days, full days worth of training. And especially when it comes to some of the licensed products that we're licensed practitioners in. So things like Insights Discovery, things like Mental Toughness through AQR International, the Thomas International suite of products and services, whether it's Belbin Team Roles, etc. That there's a lot of desire for face-to-face. And I think there's still a high understanding, especially with Mosaic clients, that there's no substitute for face-to-face. I think where we do get requests for online, it's a bit more of a hybrid approach. So for example, we've had, you know, numerous clients call us since the new financial year and say, we've had our training budget refreshed, we'd like to bring you in to develop a sort of a 6-step, an 8-step, a 12-step program around our sort of values, around our sort of organizational sort of goals, or around the strategy that we're writing, sort of 2025, you know, between now and 2025, that sort of thing. And we're really, really happy to start with a blank piece of paper and bespoke this to the client. Of course we are, we love that. And use, you know, we've got some existing content that can be, you know, can be recycled and updated and rebadged and use, which is fantastic content. I think if there is a desire, or if there is a sort of an openness to completely online, it's after we've built really good relationships with people where there's that element of trust about this. You know, this is a quality organization. They really care about what they do. And you know, we're not against, you know, completely online, but I particularly like that, because I think when you use myself and when you use Mosaic, you know, bring us in, come, you know, make us earn our money, put us to the test. We're experts in this. We know what we're doing. If we don't know, we'll just be honest with you and tell you, and we're completely authentic with what we're doing. So I think, you know, to summarize that, about 50%, probably a bit more than 50% are sort of requests for face-to-face. And with regards to sort of traveling around the UK, it's something we love doing and growing our network. There's this hybrid, you know, which is probably about 30-35% of stuff, and then the rest of it, small percentage, which is purely online through our Eventbrite. But that's, as I say, I'm sure, you know, you speak to different L&D professionals, they'll tell you something different, but that's just our experience. And, you know, to have that agility, I think, is important for us, that we can, you know, we can adapt things for online. Because especially when you're talking about learning, some of the stuff that works in a classroom, you know, wouldn't work online. And, you know, you need to adapt it. The thread of the message is the same, but actually the way of getting that, you know, the journey of getting that information across and understood and retained and sort of implanted in someone, sometimes can be very different. So to have that agility, to have that creativity, actually is something that is sort of second nature to myself and Mosaic now, which is great. Really plays into our strengths.
Yeah, I think we saw that kind of in lockdown where people were perhaps where they predominantly used face-to-face training and then had to do it online, and then creating those online packages and courses and stuff like that. It's not as easy as just to put something that's face-to-face and make it online. That's actually something that's really difficult, because like you said, when you're in the classroom with someone, you deliver that far differently to when you're actually putting that onto an online course. And that's something that we've helped customers do over that kind of lockdown period, and are starting to see people more go back into the face-to-face settings as well. Yeah. So obviously, Andrew, you've been in the industry for over 20 years. What aspect of the learning industry would you change and why?
Well, that's a great question. I think an understanding, I think sort of thinking about sort of on the spot, thinking about response, I think it's sort of the understanding or understanding the full picture, thinking about the importance of elements of learning. So thinking about the importance of language, for example. But I think the thing that changed the most is probably the way that education is probably in the media or mediated or driven. One example of this is something that I'm really passionate about. I mean, for the last 2 or 3 years, from sort of the first lockdown that come way back in sort of, you know, March a few years ago now, for myself, when we first sort of heard about everything, was the media sort of jumped on this resilience. You know, how's everyone's resilience? Let's grow this. And I say this from a position of training resilience skills out to people, being a mental health first aider. So this is not just a sort of a judgment shout, but a lot got put on resilience, and you know, in some ways rightly so, as in, you know, how can we make people more resilient here? But I think in my understanding and growing my understanding, I'm also a licensed practitioner in mental toughness. And if you look at the two, they really go hand in hand. That if you imagine the analogy is resilience and mental toughness are just different sides of the same coin. Hopefully that's understandable for the listeners, that it's, you know, it's roughly the same thing, but actually there's different angles to this. And mental toughness is very much the proactive element to something, and resilience is the reactive element to something. So resilience, the definition being how quick and how strong can you bounce back from, you know, from something that sort of, you know, trips you up or challenges you or is a hurdle in the road. And I think for me, I'd really like people's mindset to be open to looking at both the proactive and reactive element of skills. Because I say the media sort of get behind this and the language gets embedded and used. And there's a little frustration with me about, you know, having prioritizing a reactive element to the skill over a proactive element to a skill. For me, it should be a lot easier to learn how to prevent something happening, or actually more effective to prevent something from happening, rather than waiting for something to happen to test the new skill, new knowledge that I've got. So I think for me, one thing, if I could change something, it'd be sort of an openness and a patience to understanding something. I know it's a high-paced world, you know, a fast-paced world, but actually having a patience to look at both the proactive and reactive element of the skill, and actually learning something to a really good level, to a really good value, and understand, you know, really understanding it, and then making a judgment call. Because I think there's so many influences in media and social channels these days. I think people are just being miseducated that way. But yeah, there's lots of scope for positive conversations and for positive out the back of it. But yes, that's the one thing I changed, Katie.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting, especially talking about skills and things like that, because obviously that's a hot topic, I think, in learning. And I'm not sure if anyone's quite got it yet, because obviously I think COVID in the last few years has made people realise that we have to be adaptable. And because I think a lot of people did react to something that we didn't necessarily think that would actually happen, like getting locked down. And I think the businesses that have been more flexible in their approach to begin with, like having things that were online and, you know, not locking everything down completely, so you were able to work from home and things like that, I think they probably handled it a lot better because they were already like kind of set up for it, I guess. But those that kind of like locked everything down and you wouldn't be able to access your computer and stuff like that, they had to react more to that to be able to ensure their businesses could carry on running. But I think skills is a big part of learning that everyone seems to be talking about.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean people are rightly talking about it from a bit of a different angle on the same conversation about staff retention or skill shortages. So sort of the whole sort of the recruitment and retention element, you know, conversation from a HR side really comes into it there. And you're right. I think some organisations in lockdown got it very right, and I think some got it, you know, very wrong. And I think there's these organisations in the middle that, you know, did the best they could do at the time with the knowledge they had, but feel, you know, in retrospect, they could make improvements. I think you're right. I mean, one of the things that we looked at there, and we have conversations with clients, we like to put our professional opinion in, but one of the things we looked at is people in lockdown seem to complete lots and lots and lots of courses. Just because it was a sort of a bit of a hot topic, a trend. It was a bit like binge watching your favorite Netflix series or whatever streaming channel you use. And actually sometimes it's worth looking at what skill or skills that you need for the next part and really understanding them and putting the same amount of effort and time and resource and energy into learning about the skills you're actually going to need in the next 6, 12, 18 months rather than just collecting certificates. And that's just our opinion. But if you've got good planning in place, if you're an organisation that's got good planning in place, you can do this really effectively, even if that's just gaining one or two new skills over the next, you know, the next calendar financial year. If you need some help, you know, if anyone, any of the clients need some help with this, we can help with, you know, forward thinking and strategic thinking that way. But yeah, a lot of people in our social circle as well, so close to us, this is not a judgment on anyone, but people saying, oh, I've done this course today or that course today or this course today. And we think, you know, I'm an educator, I love education. But I think for me is, what's the purpose? Why did you do that? Was it to add to a CV? Was it just to have and do something that, you know, you would have been bored if you didn't do that? Or, you know, what was the purpose? What was the purpose behind that? And actually understanding one or two things a lot deeper and all aspects of it, that proactive and reactive side, I think for some of our clients would have been a lot better tactic than just to start collecting, you know, certifications or whatever. So just a sort of a professional opinion on that. But yeah, really, really have a look at understanding stuff in such a fast paced world. Everyone wants everything now. And sometimes the best thing you can do is just pause, take a minute. That's sometimes that's still progress, as in, you know, make a decision. Is this the right thing to do? Reflect, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think so. I think that from the learning effect point of view, that's one of our big things. It's like having a purpose. Like, we always bring everything back to that. Like, when we're speaking to our clients, everything goes back to, well, why are you actually doing it? So that's why we try and find out what the business goal is, not just the learning departments or HR departments. We want to understand the business. So then you can actually align those bits of learning, etc., to what the business is actually trying to achieve. So you've got that purpose. I understand, like, obviously in lockdown when people were doing lots of courses, they didn't have much else to do. But I think that's where some learning teams can go wrong, when you're providing people with like a ton of different training content and people are going out and kind of going away, like you said, getting all these certificates, but really, is it actually enhancing their jobs, etc.? I think it's good that people are learning new skills, but yeah, I think in a kind of corporate context, it's great to have people learning things that are actually going to add value and ultimately kind of progress their business.
100%. I mean, 100%. I mean, take it into a silly context, but imagine if the goal is, I'm going for a weekend away, a leisurely weekend away to France, and I want to have some conversational French in order to, you know, make an effort to speak to local people, then the skill you'd look at learning is French language. You know, that's conversational French. But sort of playing that back, if along the way you go, I'm going to start learning French, I'm going to start learning Spanish, I'm going to start learning German, Portuguese, you know, all these different languages, and just collecting languages, actually, it's so much better to go, well, what's coming up? What do I need a skill in that's going to make me feel good at the time, make me feel confident and, you know, I'm competent that I've made an effort here, other than just doing, you know, little 1% and 2% of lots of things. Actually go a little bit deeper, you know, and do something there. Silly little analogy, but it's absolutely right what you're saying. I mean, one of the conversations in the corporate world that I had a lot of the time, and actually it's sort of spanned over into Mosaic a little bit, is that initial discussion based on that purpose point. I think it was really well made there, Katie. And one of the questions we used to get a lot of the time was, what training can you give us? So when I was in the corporate world, yeah, it was like, have you got a menu? Have you got a list of courses you can do? And actually, I'd like to flip that around and say, what's your need? What is your training need? Of course, you know, we can make a menu of courses, but actually you might get a negative reaction to training, saying the training's not very good, just because you want to put someone on a course from a training menu, rather than say, do you know what? This is giving me a real headache. What solutions can we put in place for this? Or for example, a lot of my new frontline managers, for example, one corporate organization conversation was, a lot of our frontline managers, our new frontline managers, don't like having difficult conversations. So other than just let's put them on a communication skills where it could, that message could be lost, it was no, let's design something actually that gets to the heart of that and understands it and all elements of it, in order to see a change in what's currently a sort of a hurdle in your organization or giving you a stumble in your organization. So I think it's a brilliant question to ask, going back to purpose. And it's something that's continued for us in Mosaic, is them early conversations. And sometimes with an external voice, it's easier to have them conversations than the external voice than the internal L&D voice, because you're consulting with people. That's your purpose, is, you know, I want you to get complete value for this. What's really going to move the dial on this? If I create something and I've got 2 hours, 4 hours, 8 hours to do this, what's really going to move that dial for you? So then conversations are easier to have as an external voice. But yeah, if you're an internal L&D professional, have them questions. Don't just take that first hand look at it. Actually go back and say, what's causing you a headache, and try and solve the problem. That's a lot better than trying to sort of shoehorn people into an essential skills training title on the way, because the issue might be lost.
Yeah, and I think, like you kind of you mentioned the kind of menu for training and stuff, and I think that's pretty common in the kind of corporate world. People come to you and expect you to have this menu, and I don't think that's necessarily the right approach, because that's not necessarily going to fix anything anyway. Like you said, if you've got specific issues, whether it's kind of difficult conversations or whatever that might be, it's better to get those people involved, really understand that issue, so you can then work with each other to kind of create that great learning that's actually going to be purposeful and useful for people, as opposed to just giving them a menu. And like you said, they're coming back and going, it's probably not rubbish, it's just not relevant. And that's the thing as well. And it's understanding that that's not going to fix everything. It's in combination with people changing behaviours, etc. as well. So
I think that's it. I think it's a blended approach. But I mean, people have got so little time now to invest in this, just because of the pace of life, the business workload, sort of the hybrid, even with the sort of the, you know, people who've not got daily commutes, or, you know, have got less commutes than they used to have, actually people's, you know, priorities have changed a little bit. So yeah, if someone's got 2 hours of development time a month that they can personally commit to, try and get to that, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours worth of quality content, rather than say, I'm going to put you on an eight week course. I don't, and like you said, it'll all be good stuff. There are some great learning development professionals out there. You know, it'll all be really well thought out, and it'll be well delivered, it'll be well planned. But sometimes, you know, those people don't get the credit for what they are, because the initial conversation, don't underestimate the power of that initial conversation, and that being an honest and open conversation as well, non-judgmental, you know, completely open and honest, as in, you know, this is our issue, or these are our issues. And the quicker you can get to that open, honest conversation, the better for me. Because, you know, if you can go in there and sort of leave ego at the door and say, you know, we'd like your help with this, whether it's, you know, Mosaic and myself, or whether it's, you know, an internal, you know, L&D professional, the better, you know, the quicker you can get to that honest conversation, help me with this, you can really start making some strides. But it needs honesty. It needs people to go in there with that sort of non-judgmental head from all angles of the conversation. And not to assume as well. I work with lots of clients, you know, senior leaders, who a lot of organizations assume that they have essential skills. And again, sometimes it's going back and saying, tell me what your experience to date is with effective communication and engagement, or, you know, coaching skills, for example, or, you know, any one of the other titles that, you know, that we deliver. But, you know, don't assume that people in senior positions I've sort of gone through and been told, you know, ask the question, ask the, you know, the, to us, the obvious question, but don't assume that, because a big percentage of the people that we speak to have been promoted into senior roles because they've been really effective at a previous role. So say, for example, I worked in the food industry, you know, people have been effective operators, so they become supervisors, they've been effective supervisors, so they become managers, you know, they've been effective managers, so they become leaders. But along that pathway, along that journey, they've taken on much more accountability, and obviously their remuneration is good and they've been well compensated for what they do with salaries and benefits, etc. But very little of that percentage have actually had any essential skills. So just because you're a good operative and technical at the job, you might now be in charge of a group of 20 people, 30 people, 40, 50 people doing the job. And it's not you doing it anymore. You've got to now lead or manage people to get results through people. And that's a very different skill set. So again, not making assumptions, going, you know, how effective is your communication? How do you engage people? You know, when do you do this? How would you do this? And just being curious sometimes is really good conversation starter to be with people, because, you know, we speak to people every day across the UK where they're in senior positions and they've got there through hard work and consistency. It's really good, but it's a different set of skills that's got them to the position where they are. And actually now they feel a bit, you know, a bit isolated, a bit open sometimes, you know, a bit, they can get a little bit more bruised, because it's a completely different skill set doing the job yourself to managing people to get the job done, you know, through individuals.
Yeah, I think people have that assumption that they see a job role and then they automatically assume that those people have got all of those skills. Mm-hmm. So we could speak forever about this topic, I feel, Andrew, but what does the future look like for you and for Mosaic?
That's a great question. For me, this is about continuing to be true to ourselves, you know, so accessible to, you know, as many people as we can, being authentic in the work that we do and the conversations that we have, and being really objective with helping organisations with their learning, training, talent and development goals. I would love to grow the business. It's growing really nice organically, but I'd love to, you know, continue growing the business. And continue to grow in some, you know, some trusted affiliates along the way to help us sort of widen our scope on some of the titles that we do, as we specialise in leadership and people management, frontline management training. But we've got some great affiliates, and we'd like to continue to grow our affiliate list and our connections, do our due diligence on our affiliates. So anyone that comes to Mosaic is getting a really professional service when it comes to learning development. So yeah, growth of the business for 2023 and a little bit beyond. But then after that, absolutely. Let's see where that takes us, Katie.
That sounds awesome. So thank you very much, Andrew, for joining me today. So if people want to get in touch with you, how do they go about doing that?
Multiple ways. We're on email, which is mosaicprofessional@outlook.com. We're available for text or call as well. Our contact number here is 07999 325 605, or of course we're on social channels if you just want to follow some of the progress and some of the things that we're doing on LinkedIn mainly, but after that Instagram, Facebook, Eventbrite. You can connect in with us and see what we're doing on there, the low cost and free of charge stuff. And we've even got a Spotify channel as well, so we're providing some sort of background music for your training sessions or some classical music for your concentration sessions and your well-being. So I check out our Spotify channel as well.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Andrew. We'll put those links in the show notes below.
Excellent. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if the Learning Effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.